Morning, church. I think Wednesday the sheets disappear. So if you're thinking about signing up, you need to go ahead and do that. I think we've got 120 to 130 who is signed up. We have plenty of fish, but we have plenty of fish for those who signed up. So if you didn't sign up, don't come. It's about the only way I could say it. So, and you can't be mad because we've told you forever to sign up. So sign up if you haven't signed up, and make sure you also sign up to bring a side. If you don't know how to make a side, go to KFC and get one, or some barbecue joint and get that one, and or Cock of the Walk, whatever is your fancy. Or pay somebody who's bringing stuff to bring your share. Whatever you got to do, just bring some sides. And service that night starts at 4:30, so don't get here at 4:30. If you're bringing food, you know, get here at 4:15 at the latest, and you can drop your food off and still make it in here. So if you're getting here at 4:30, that means you don't get in the auditorium until 4:45. Not that we're going to wait on you or anything, but you know, it's just, I know we have to change time, so it means we have to get those things out of the way. I know I have, you know, I shouldn't have to say that, but lo and behold, half of us will show up at 4:30 with our dishes. So try to get here a little bit before that. That that text that Luke read, you know, it's a story I think we've read a million times. In fact, it's probably one of the most famous, if not the most recognizable story in the Bible outside of the Christ story. It's a story we've heard since our VBS days. It's a story, no, I mean, if you think about all the things that people have written about, I don't know, hit it again and see what happens. Just hit a button. Yeah. If you just go through Amazon or you go to any bookstore and you start looking at all the books or all the things that people write about the story of David and Goliath, it's just, it just, the list goes on and on and on. There's even a, you know, a Christian feel-good movie about it. If you remember the Facing the Giants, there's even an Amazon show. I'm not recommending that one, but you know, all of these books or TV shows or movies, they're all about these small-time people or these smaller people, these underdogs that are trying to fight these larger companies or these larger beasts or these bigger giants. So whatever you've read or whatever you've seen, almost all of us recognize and like the David and Goliath story. And here's why. I like the David and Goliath story because I like underdog stories. You know, it can be two football teams that you think, oh, you know, they have no shot, and they do it. We always like to see the little guy win. So whether, you know, they got lucky or they should or shouldn't have won, that's why we like the story. I like the story because I like to see myself as an underdog. I like to see that if they can do it, I can do it. If they can do big things, I can do big things. If they can beat that big event, or if they can win, then I can win. That's what we like. But there's another one. It's that I put my hope in these stories. I put my hope in a David and Goliath story. If I feel that I have to face my giant and you have to face your giant, then at some point we want to read that story and think that if David can win, then I'm going to win. But you all probably know that's not usually how it all ends, is it? The underdog story usually happens one in a million. And when you have a small-time person trying to go against a big-time person, or when you have someone trying to accomplish the impossible, this is not the norm. And I think our biggest mistake is that we read these stories, we put our hope in them, and we think that this is how it's going to end every time. I will tell you that David talked a big game. You know, this is what God has done for me, and surely he's going to do it again. And I've talked a big game too. But I wasn't 100% sure that it was going to end the way I said it was going to end. I wanted to believe it. I trusted in it. But I can't control it. This morning, I think everybody in here is facing some kind of giant. Everybody. And to all of us, it's going to take different forms, no matter what your age, no matter what you're in. It's going to take a different shape. And it could take a different shape based upon whatever experience you're going through. You may have to. I know there are some parents in here whose children have been diagnosed, and you don't really know what to do. I know there are some children in here whose parents have been given a diagnosis. You don't know what to do. I know there are people in here who've had to move or who've had to make serious life changes, into things that they've never done before. And when you make those changes and when you make those moves, you're kind of stuck doing some things that you've never had to do and you don't know how to do, or you don't know how to face, and so you're kind of wandering around in the dark. I know there are some sons in here and some daughters who are caring for aging parents. And the parents don't really realize that they can't drive anymore. Or the parents don't really realize that they can't do these things for themselves anymore. And you're the only one that can really break it to them. I know there are some in here who are unemployed and they have to return to school because the world has changed and left you with no earnable skills with which to feed your family. No matter what it is, all of us in here have to at one point or another face a giant. Here's what David's story, I think, teaches us. Your giants, no matter, and you may say, well, I don't have to face anything big. Your giant's going to take one of these three forms, one of them, I think. The first one is that you're facing insurmountable odds. There's no way you can win. There's no way you can win. Whatever you're up against is too big for you. So whatever you're up against has the word terminal in it, or maybe you're up against something that says malignant. Maybe you're up against something that has life without parole. Whatever you're up against is too big for you. You're not big enough. You're not strong enough. You're facing it, and you cannot win. There's no way to win. That's a giant. And you might think, yeah, but we should give it a... There's no way you can win. None. That's what makes you an underdog. You're a 50-point... They got a 50-point favorite on you. You can't win. Nobody would bet on you. Doesn't mean you won't. Just means you can't. Or how about this kind of giant? The unknown. Some of you are facing something that you don't know the result. You don't know how it's going to turn out. You don't know what they're going to say. You don't know how they're going to respond. You don't know whether this treatment's going to work. You don't know whether this angle's going to work. You don't know anything that's going to happen. That's a giant. I'm not sure David knew exactly this is how it's all going to end. I think he had an idea. Or how about this one? You have dug yourself into such a hole that there is no getting out. You've been digging and been digging and been digging. We've all warned you, but you have decided you want to open your mouth and say things you shouldn't. You want to do some things you shouldn't. You want to make some decisions that you shouldn't. You want to do some last-minute decisions. And then you look around and you're in this deep, deep hole, and there is no getting out. That's a giant. You may think that this isn't David, but y'all know this story, and if you got your Bible, if you're in 1 Samuel 17, you'll discover very quickly that David has gotten himself into this pickle. David wasn't supposed to be here. It's not like David went there with his sling over his shoulder and he said, I'm going to go fight a giant today. David is expected to be home. He came there to deliver some food for his brothers. And you may not have seen this, but that food was a bribe. He came there to deliver all these supplies to the king that would keep his brothers out of harm's way. And he gets there, and he sees what's going on, and he decides that he's going to open his mouth. He's going to go to his brothers, who are trained in military operations, and he says, what's wrong? Can nobody take on this guy? Who are you to ask such a question? It would be like the smallest guy in the... How about this? It would be like a lot of these armchair quarterbacks who watch Sunday NFL. And I hear them all the time. If I was a coach, I would do this. But you're not a coach. And do you know why you're not a coach? Because you're terrible. You know, there's a reason you don't coach football. It's because you would be bad at it. Because they wouldn't listen to you. How do you know that? Because you don't coach football. That's how we know. These guys get paid a lot of money to do this, and you don't, because they're better than you. But we still criticize. Hey, I'm the first one to criticize my team. Or anybody else's team, for that matter. Especially the ones I don't like. David gets there, and he criticizes. And they don't know why he's saying what he's saying, but the reason you're saying what you're saying, it's easy for you to criticize. You don't have to be here. And then he makes his other mistake. He goes in there to Saul, the king, and Saul tries to help him. And he tells Saul, well, I can't use any of this. I'll just do it on my own. Let me ask y'all a question. What is David thinking when he finally gets to the ravine? Boy, what did I get myself into? Here I came to deliver all this food. Here I came to be here so that I could somehow help my brothers and get them out of this situation. And then I end up being the one who's got to face everything. You know, there's a common denominator to this facing giant business, is that every single one of you find yourself in a position that nobody else can do. You know how many times I have seen the well-being of mom and dad fall to one sibling? Why is that? Y'all seen it too? Some of you have been that sibling, haven't you? You got a lot of brothers and sisters. You got people who can help you. But when it comes to mom and dad, why are you the one who has to take care of mom and dad? Let me tell you the answer. Because nobody else will. Sorry. Because nobody else will. I know you're upset about it, but your brothers and sisters are not going to do it. They don't want to do it. They're scared to do it. They don't have the courage to do it. They don't have the strength to do it. Maybe they don't live here, and so they can't do it. And so it falls to you. And what a lot of us end up doing is complaining. Why do I have to do this? Don't complain. That's your giant. We have to face it. Nobody else is going to face this guy except David. Nobody. And so it's left to him. I don't want anybody in here to think that this story is supposed to teach you how to beat your giant or how to win, because most of the time you're not going to. What the story does teach us is how to face them. And that's what I think we could all use some help on. This morning, what I hope you leave with is that whatever you're facing, whether it's mom and dad or whether it's your son who continues to be denied bail, or whether it's your diagnosis, or whether it's your new job, whatever it is, I can't say that I'll promise you it's all going to work out. I can't say that I can promise you won't get fired again. I can't make any of those promises, and God never does. What I can show you is that from this story, we discover how to face them. Didn't say it'll work out, but we can face them. And here's how. You have to remember where you came from. You have to take a look in your rear view or in your side view and look behind you and think about all the little bitty giants you have gone through to get to this point. Look at how far God has brought you to get to this point. You didn't just show up and say it's time to do this. You've been fighting giants. You've been slaying things. You've been facing things. God has led you to this moment. Here in 1 Samuel 17, look back at those verses 34 through 37. This is what David's talking about. He says, your servant's been keeping his father's sheep. A lion or a bear come, and they carry off a sheep from the flock, and I went after it. I struck it. I rescued the sheep from its mouth. When it turned to me, I seized it by its hair. I struck it, and I killed it. Your servant has killed both the lion and the bear. The uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, because he has defied the armies of the living God. The Lord has rescued me from the paw of the lion, and the paw of the bear, and the paw of the bear. He will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine. I've been through bigger stuff. I've been through stuff like this before. This ain't nothing. I know. I've done things like this. In reading a book about the Greatest Generation in World War II, they were talking to all of these young men who flew in these planes. Just jumped out of them. And they would jump out of them not knowing what was at the bottom, not knowing if they would get hurt, not knowing if they would get captured, not knowing anything, but they just jumped. And this reporter in the 70s was interviewing these men who jumped out of these planes. And they said, you sound crazy for doing something like that. And he said, it almost sounds as if you have to be not all upstairs to jump out of a plane like that. And the guys they were interviewing, they said, when I signed up for the Army and the Navy, when I signed up to fight in this war, I'd been 6 days without eating. 6 days without eating any food. So to me, jumping out of a plane was nothing compared to starving to death. They've been facing giants. They've been facing lions and bears. They've been facing these things. God has prepared them for this moment. There are a lot of us, we just jump right into this shit. We don't even take a look. Look, you've been through worse stuff. You've been through bad stuff. You have to remember how far God has brought you before you can start to tackle this. Just pause and take a look back. Here's the other thing. You don't just take a look back. We're going to have to step out in faith. At some point, you got to turn everything over. You got to just turn it all over. You can only get yourself so far, but the other mistake besides just not thinking about our past is that we throw up a Hail Mary. I don't know what to do, so I'm just gonna take a risk. I'm gonna do this. What's that gonna do? Hail Marys rarely win a game. Rarely. Because it's just almost impossible. David tells Saul, I've been through stuff like this before, and Saul says, let's throw up a Hail Mary. Saul says, I got it. Here's some stuff. Let me put it on you. Let me put my armor on you. Let me put my helmet on you. Let me give you my sword. And David says, ain't none of this stuff fit. This ain't gonna work. I have to do what I know that I've been doing. And church, those are the two that the sermons always stop at. Think about how far God has brought you, and then step out in faith, invitation, and let's go home. And I have never heard anyone ever talk about that one line in this story that will actually help us discover what it is you and I can do. It's that third in-between part. 1 Samuel 17, verse 40. After meeting with Saul, David took a staff and he approached the Philistine. There's a sentence in between those lines. He took a staff in his hand, verse 40, and he chose 5 smooth stones from the stream. And he put them in the pouch of his shepherd's bag, and with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. God has all the power to help you out of this. And with your faith, God can do great things. But he's not going to do it alone. You're going to have to be a part of it. So what do? David can't do anything. He can't control how this turns out. What he can do is to go through the valley of the shadow of death and pick up the 5 best rocks that he can. How does this relate to you? How do you pick up stones? How does your giant slay just by you picking up stones? I'm going to give you the best advice I ever got. You need to do the best you can while you can with what you have. And that's all. Do the best you can while you can with what you have. There's a lot of us who are trying to save our marriage today. Listen very carefully. You're not going to save it today. Don't misunderstand me. I didn't say you're not going to save it. You're not going to save it today. When you try to save it today, you're going to be disappointed because you can't. There's a lot of us who are so far in debt, I'm not really sure how you're going to get out without totally destroying your credit. You're not going to save yourself today from the debt. You won't. What you can do is to do what you can while you can with what you have. There are a lot of us who are facing mom and dad, and that's just a lot of what's going on in here. There's a lot of us who are having to face our parents, or it's our children, and neither will behave, will they? You thought it was the kids, and now everything's kind of reversed. But neither will really do what you need them to do. So let me bust your bubble. They're not going to do it today either. They're not going to do it. What you can do is do what you can while you can with what you have. That's all. Just a little. Just 5 stones. You notice David didn't go out there with nothing. I have faith that God's going to get me out of this, and so hopefully the Lord will come down and send angels and kill all this. Some of us approach the problem this way. I'm just going to have faith that God will get me out. Do you think God's going to show up at the bank and pay that bill? Is that what we think? I hope not, because that's not how he seems to operate. Maybe some of us go out to the mailbox and get out letters and look at it. Maybe today is the day that, what is it, the sweepstakes? Do we even have that? Maybe today will be the day. Maybe I'll win the lottery. Look, that ain't faith. I don't know what that is. That's you looking at Facebook too much. That's not reality. All you can do is what you can, while you can, with what you have. What does that look like? What does that look like? Now, I thought about this week. We were thinking back to a pretty trying time in our family years ago. And my wife reminded me that during that time, she decided she was going to keep a journal during that time. She wrote down everything she could to remember what had happened. And the reason she did that is that there's nothing else she could do. Everything was spinning out of control. There was no end in sight. There was nothing that was going to work itself out. She didn't know when she was going to be back. She didn't know anything. All she knew was that today is all I have. And so while it's today, I'm going to do what I can, while I can, with what I have. And so she had this journal. And in this journal is this text from Matthew, from the Sermon on the Mount. I want to read this. In Matthew chapter 6, verse 25, Jesus says, "Therefore I tell you, don't worry about your life. Don't worry what you'll eat or drink, or about your body, what you'll wear. It's not life more than food, and body not more than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they are? Can any one of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? Why do you worry about your clothes? How about the flowers of the field? They don't labor or spin, and yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that's how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown in the fire, how much more will he clothe you? Do not worry, saying, 'What am I going to eat? What are we going to drink? What are we going to wear?' Look, pagan people run after those things. Your Father knows what you need. But seek his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Do not, do not, do not worry about tomorrow, because tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own." We have misinterpreted this for centuries. When Jesus says, "Don't worry about tomorrow," that means, hey, don't worry about it. Just blow it off. Just go fishing. That ain't what he's saying. Jesus is saying that tomorrow's got enough trouble of its own. Just don't worry about today. He's not saying, hey, you got a lot of problems. Just don't worry about any of it. Don't stress. Don't get angry. Don't be upset. He's not saying any of that stuff. What he's saying is this: your problem cannot be solved today. It won't be. It won't be saved today. You can't get them clean today. They can't go through rehab in a day. You're not going to lose 32 pounds in a day. You won't do it today. And you're probably not going to do it tomorrow. What you can do is figure out what you can do while you can with what you have. And that's all. The only thing David can do is to collect rocks. That is it. This morning, I want to ask all of you, what can you do today? What can you do today? You're probably not going to slay this today. You're not going to win today. You're not going to make it work today. It's not going to happen today. But you can do something today. What is it? And let me tell you about Alice Yearning in case you still don't understand. Alice Yearning was 38 when her husband fell. And her husband fell and hit his